Okay, after having discussed the names of Torah and what that might indicate about the Torah's essence, we're going to go on to discuss the content of Torah, which we can divide into two categories, Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh, and then further subdivide for Torah Shebichtav, it's Torah, Nevi'im, and Ketuvim. Let's focus on Torah for a second. Of course, Torah is broken up into five Svarim of Bereishit, Shemot, Vayikra, Bemidbar, and Dvarim. Each story has their own area of focus, Bereishit being focusing on really primarily the Avot, Shemot starting out by focusing on the formulation of Klal Yisrael as a nation, and then the second part of Shemot is focusing on Matan Torah and the construction of the Mishkan. Vayikra is all about the service of the Mishkan and the eventual service of the Beit HaMikdash. Bamidbar being, you know, a major account of the stories that transpired in the Midbar. And finally, Dvarim is kind of something of a recap of the Torah, or a recap of much of the Bamidbar experience. But Chazal gave each Sefer an independent name, and I think that Sefer is very often an insight into the essence of what's dealt with in that book. So Bereishit is Sefer HaBriah, which we understand because it deals with Briat HaOlam, but beyond that, Sefer Bereishit seems to be, throughout not just Parsha Bereishit, but the entire Sefer, dealing with the origin of everything that we know in the world today. So, you know, maybe on the most basic level, you look at Adam and Chava, who it would seem from observing their story is not just the story of the first man and woman, but perhaps a story about the human experience, the male experience and the female experience. And it's interesting how the stories that they undergo actually explain to us some natural phenomenon, some emotional phenomenon, and just some major elements of the human experience today. You know, for example, the knowledge of Tov Vira, the knowledge of good and evil, were things that apparently human beings did not have when they were created. But it's, of course, something that we're deeply familiar with today, and that has its origin story with Adam and Chava. Of course, childbirth, which we know is a natural biological process, again, has its origin with Chava. And so we see that Adam and Chava are not just random stories about the first man and woman, but rather stories about the development of man and woman to what we know them to be today. And the same is true for actually all nations of the world, many of the big nations of the world, and especially Klal Yisrael. So the big nations of the world just have a brief origin story where we get Ammon and Moab from Lot's daughters, where we get Edom from Esav, where we get Yishmael, where we have, you know, the major nations of the world that exist and that comprise these 70 nations of the world that we're familiar with. Have their origin stories in Bereishit. So again, this is not just about the creation of the world, it's really about the creation of the world and everything in it and everything that we know today. And furthermore, the main focus of Sefer Bereishit seems to be, sure, on the Avot, but in a deeper sense, it's on the creation of Klal Yisrael. So the stories around the Avot and the Shvatim are not just stories about our ancestors, but they're actually stories about the formulation of Klal Yisrael, and you could see it as the programming of, or the hardwiring of, our spiritual DNA, or our religious identity. See, in the same way that you can understand the story of, you know, Chava, and what she did, and how she was punished, and why she was punished, and how that impacted all women today, you can understand that what the Avot went through were essentially hardwiring our spiritual DNA and building the actions and the events and the midot that they represented in their lives into our spiritual identity. And so the Avot stories, again, they're more than just historical accounts of our ancestors, but they are really, they serve as something much deeper than that. They serve as the story themselves can also be seen as the hardwiring of our spiritual DNA. Everything that they went through is now deeply rooted within our spiritual character as a on a national level. And Sefer Shmot is Sefer HaGe'ulah. The Ramban famously asks why it's called Sefer HaGe'ulah, meaning I understand Klal Yisrael was redeemed, taken out of Egypt. Through that process, we have, you know, we formulate as a nation, and or we forge a nation, we develop that connection with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and then we ultimately receive the Torah. But by the end of Sefer Shmot, we are not yet in Eretz Yisrael, which would be the peak of our redemption, not just from bondage to nothingness, but rather from Egypt to Israel. That's how we understand the complete process. So the Ramban very famously says there that the Sefer, it's called Sefer HaGe'ulah because it ends off with the completion of the construction of the Mishkan and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence residing among us. So even while the Ge'ula Shlema is once we get to Eretz Yisrael, there is still a partial Ge'ula, a partial Kiyum of the Ge'ula once we have HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence reside among us. And that's why it's Sefer HaGe'ulah. We're not only redeemed in a sense of taken out of slavery on a physical level, but also on a spiritual level, we were brought from a godless nation to one that has God in our midst. And that was the true Ge'ulah. Vayikra is Torat Kohanim, and that is the accounts of, you know, most of what the Kohanim's service is going to be, both before the Beit HaMikdash and during the Tkufa of the Beit HaMikdash. Then you have Bamidbar, which is Sefer HaPikudim, which is a Sefer full of, a book full of accounts, accountings for war and, or for the Avodat HaMishkan. And finally, you have the Mishneh Torah, the repetition of the Torah. Of course, it's not a direct repetition, but the difference, the nuances, and come to highlight some key elements of the Torah, and also specifically whenever you have two accounts of something, like for example, the two accounts of the Aseret HaDibrot, studying the difference between those two accounts is very revelatory of what we went through in the Midbar itself. So that's something about that's just a deeper look into the Chamishei Chumshei Torah. Then we'll move on to Nevi'im. Essentially, you have Nevi'im and Ketuvim. Nevi'im primarily is written through Nevuah, and Ketuvim is primarily written through Ruach HaKodesh. Nevi'im primarily deals with either stories or prophecies, where Ketuvim can have some stories, some prophecies, and a lot of philosophical works, or a lot of works of deep Jewish thought. So the Gemara in Masechet Bava Batra deals with the order of the Nevi'im, lists them off: Yeshua, Shoftim, Shmuel, Malachim, Yirmiyah, Yechezkel, Yishayahu, and the Treyasar. Of course, we're generally more familiar with Yishayahu being listed before Yirmiyahu, but these basic Svarim, the Treyasar being Hoshea, Yoel, Amos, Ovadja, Yonah, Micha, Nachum, Chavakuk, Zephaniah, Chagai, Zachariah, and Malachi. So these are the minor prophets, and of course, Nevi'im itself is broken up into three parts, essentially, where you have the Nevi'im Rishonim, which are obviously very deep and very meaningful stories, but at least story and historically oriented, where we have a detailed account of our conquering the land of Israel and our settling the land of Israel from Sefer Yoshua, our initial attempt to set up a system of government and the ultimate problems and failures with the Shoftim model, our development into the Malachim model through the last of the Shoftim, through Shmuel, and finally our dynasties, our kingship dynasties, which eventually broke after Shlomo HaMelech into two different kingdoms, into Malchei Yehuda and Malchei Yisrael. That's Nevi'im Rishonim. Nevi'im Achronim happened at the same tkufa, the same time period as Malachim, for the most part. Some of them even happened after the Malachim. But they have a very different focus. Instead of telling you the history, they're more focused on giving over relevant messages that the different prophets of their time, the biggest of them being Yishayahu, Yirmiyahu, and Yechezkel, Yishayahu having dealt with the stage of our history where we still had a chance of reforming our ways and saving the Beit HaMikdash, our ultimate failure to do so, our destruction, and then our promises or our prophecies, La'atid Lavo. Yirmiyahu dealt primarily with the prophecies around the destruction, and Yechezkel dealt a lot with the prophecies of La'atid Lavo and the more abstract domain of what we're waiting for, what we're anticipating in that regard, Maaseh Merkava, etc. And finally, the smaller prophets, just it's also primarily prophecy or story-oriented, just with smaller stories that didn't play as significant of a role as we see Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel, and Yishayahu. So that's Nevi'im Rishonim and Nevi'im Achronim, and the difference between that division, of course, the division of Shmuel, Aleph and Bet, Malachim, Aleph and Bet, as well as Divrei HaYomim, Aleph and Bet, are not Jewish divisions. So that's Nevi'im. When it comes to Ketuvim, again, the marking trait of Ketuvim is that it's written through Ruach HaKodesh. So the Gemara in Bava Batra also gives you the list for the Ketuvim. It also lists everyone who wrote everything. There's some small discrepancies between what it says in Bava Batra and what it says in Seder Olam Rabbah, which we're a little bit more familiar with in terms of the authors of different of the Sfarim. But I just want to focus on the content for now. So we have in Ketuvim, it says root v'sefer Tehillim, which is interesting because we're familiar with a different order. Root v'sefer Tehillim, Iov v'mishle, Kohelet, Shir Hashirim, Kinot, which we call Eicha, Daniel, u'Megillah Esther, Ezra, v'Divrei Hayamim. So again, we're familiar with five Megillas, whereas here we just say Megillat Esther. We're familiar with Eicha, here we call it Kinot. Perhaps we're familiar with Ezra and Nehemiah. Here it's grouped together just as Ezra. And Tehillim is essentially David HaMelech Tefillot to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where you learn a tremendous amount about the nature of Tefillah in general, as well as the different ways to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Tefillah and through conversation, and the different times that we want to turn to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and what the appropriate way is to do so, times of happiness, times of sadness, times of success, times of thanks, times of fear. So David HaMelech really details for us the many different ways of reaching HaKadosh Baruch Hu through our words, through our tefillah. Then you have Mishle, which is authored by, Seder Olam Rabbah attributes it to Shlomo Melech. That's what we're most familiar with. And that is basically Mishalim. Right? It's a crash course in Jewish thought through different ideas and metaphors, as opposed to having the ideas spelled straight out. Iov, which is a book about Tzadik Varalo, essentially, how to wrap your mind around good people to whom bad things happen. Iov was a wonderful follower of God, and the Satan told God it was only because that God gave him whatever that he wanted, whatever he needed, and that's why he was such a devout follower. But of course, that would fall away if God ever ceased to do so, and we see the details of Iov's gradual demise as everything is taken from him. And ultimately, God's message at the end for what the proper way to see it, the proper way to view our experiences in our own life and the bad things that happens to us. Then we have what we call the five Megillas, which are Eicha, start with Shir HaShirim, which is a love song from Shlomo HaMelech to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, also representative of the way that we're supposed to relate to God. Root, which was written by Shmuel in the time of the Shoftim, and it was kind of the pathway leading up to David HaMelech. We have Eicha, which is again Yirmiyahu's Sefer around the destruction. Kohelet, which was Shlomo Melech's Sefer, kind of mapping out different ways of living your life, seeing the world, whether you should assume that nothing is significant, or nothing is important, nothing matters, or maybe I should only be pursuing pleasure because that's what matters most, and ultimately his conclusion for leading a religious lifestyle. And finally, the one that we're most familiar with, Megillat Esther, followed by Daniel, another officer in the Galut, in the exile, who's ultimately stripped from his glory and whose life is threatened, followed by Ezra, the story of our return and the Divrei Hayamim, which is essentially, in the one sense, seems like a recap of the Torah with many very clear distinctions. In an interesting sense, it's kind of like Tanakh is, in a certain sense, recapped in a similar way to how the Torah is recapped through Devarim. But of course, there are many, many significant differences between Divrei Hayamim's account and the Torah's account, as well as just different things highlighted and different things focused upon. And that essentially was written at the time where there was some dispute around who were the proper leaders of Klal Yisrael, and Divrei Hayamim was basically written to give credence to the Malchut Beit David and the kosher Kohanim who were meant to be serving in the Beit HaMikdash. That is, I guess, you know, Torah Shebichtav in a nutshell. There's a lot more to say, but we'll go on now to Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebaal Peh, let's take a look at the Rambam in the Hakdama LePerush Mishnayot. So the Rambam in his Hakdama outlines a fair bit about Torah Shebaal Peh and the process and how it works. We're going to see a little bit more about the Torah Shebaal Peh when we get up to the chapter where we're just going to focus fully on Torah Shebaal Peh, but now I just want to map out its contents, which the Rambam does in several different places in the Hakdama LePerush Mishnayot, and I want to break it up into three parts. First of all, the Rambam says, Da shekol mitzvah shenatan HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe Rabbeinu nitna lo im perusha. Haya HaKadosh Baruch Hu omer lo hamikra v'achar kach omer lo perusho ubi'uro. V'kol ma shekalal oto hamikra hamechuka. So it's interesting. So the Rambam says all the mitzvot that we have, so they came from Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu explained to Moshe Rabbeinu everything there was to know about that mitzvah. Here's basically what he would do. He would say, Moshe Rabbeinu, write down this pasuk, and then he would give him the perush, and he would give him the biur. So what is the perush, and what is the biur? And then finally, v'chol ma shekalal oto hamikra mechuka. So essentially, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu would give Moshe Rabbeinu was two things. First of all, is the perush to the pasuk itself, because there are many different levels to understand the pasuk. Sometimes you don't even understand it on a pshat level, necessarily. For example, we count Sefirat HaOmer from the second day of Pesach. That was a topic of much dispute between the Perushim and the Tzedukim in its time, because the Torah says that we're supposed to count Sefirat HaOmer mimacharat HaShabbat. And so the Tzedukim count from the first Yom Rishon of Pesach, whereas we count after the first day of Chag, because we understand, based on our Mesorah, that the Perush of Mimacharat HaShabbat is Mimacharat, the day after the first day of Pesach. So sometimes the Perushim were just explaining the Pshat to us, because the Pshat itself was unclear. And sometimes the Pshat itself was clear, but there were many subsequent levels of interpretation that we needed to know as well, in increasing depth. And that's something that we're going to see a little bit more at length in some of the coming shiurim. But beyond the perush of the pasuk, or the explanation of the elucidation, then there would be all these details that weren't included within the actual pasuk given that needed to have been, that still needed to be mentioned. So for example, the Rambam brings an example himself, and it says, V'inelech ha-mashal, amar lo Hashem besukot teshevu shivat yamin. וגם הודיעו השם מתעלה שסוכה זו חובת הסתרים ולא נקבות ואין החובה לחולים ולא הולכי דרכים ואין מסכין אותה אלא בדבר הצומח מן הארץ וכו' וכו'. The Rambam gives this example where he basically says that what happened, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would say, write down now that you have to sit in a sukkah for 7 days. Okay. And then he's like, well, what's a sukkah? Well, this is what a sukkah is, and this is what it can be made from, and this is what it can't be made from, and this is how the walls work, and this is how to calculate, and this is what the walls can be made out of, and this is who has to sit in the sukkah, this is who doesn't have to sit in the sukkah, this is who's always obligated, this is who's never obligated, this is who's sometimes obligated. He would say, okay, write in the Torah, b'sukkot teshvu shivat yamim, and let me explain to you what a sukkah is, and let me explain to you what teshvu implies, and let me explain to you who has to do this, and let me explain to you what you have to do. All of these details. So what we've seen so far is essentially two components of the Torah Shebaal Peh. One of them is the explanations of the psukim themselves. The next is the elaborations of all the elaborations upon all the dinim mentioned. We kind of got the shorthand through Moshe, but Moshe Rabbeinu himself got all the explanations. Hey, what's a sukkah? What are tefillin? It just says tefillin. We have no idea what tefillin are. So he told Moshe, this is what the tefillin looked like. This is how you're supposed to make them. This is what's inside of them. This is tefillin shel yad. This is tefillin shel rosh. So that is the second element of what Moshe Rabbeinu got. Not just the way of understanding the psukim, but all of the dinim and the parameters of every concept that is included within the Torah. The final stage that you can see that the Rambam talks about here in the Hakdama of the Perash Mishnayot is where he speaks about what happened after Moshe Rabbeinu died and a debate would come up about a topic that had not yet been addressed. The Torah didn't address every single topic. So what were they supposed to do at that point to address these new topics, these new concepts? So what they would do was they would take the Yud Gimel Midot Shatorah Nidreshet Behen, essentially 13 principles for extracting dinim, extracting laws from the Torah, and they would debate over which is the right din to apply to this verse, to this pasuk, and then ultimately they would vote on who had the proper position, who had the position that was seen to be most correct and most accurately representative of what the Torah was indicating. And through these Yud Gimel Midot, we were able to extract more information from the Torah than was written explicitly, or than Moshe Rabbeinu told us over explicitly, in order to address the questions and concerns of the developing passing time. So we can really divide Torah Shebaal Peh up into these three categories. You have the perushim of the text itself, you have the biurim and all the additional elements of the mitzvot that God gave over to Moshe, and finally you have the Yud Gimel Midot, which enable us to be further mefaresh the Torah after Moshe Rabbeinu's death. The two major works of Torah Shebaal Peh, where we have both an inclusion of everything that we knew up until the point of this work, as well as the chidushim that those rabbanim involved offered through the Yud Gimel Midot, is the Mishnah and the Gemara. Essentially, the Mishnah was a collection of all the dinim that we were aware of at the time, and the relevant, or all the dinim that we received from Moshe Rabbeinu, together with the various debates that had come up. And the Gemara was, as well as some chidushim of the Rabbanim of that time, in the domains of either dinim that were extracted through the Yud Gimel Midot, or takanas, or gzeiras. And then we have the Gemara, which essentially debates the different parameters of the dinim in the Mishnah, and has their own chidushim as well, in terms of new dinim, new gzeiras, and new takanas. After the Gemara, after the seal of the Gemara, we were authoritatively incomparable. After that time period, we no longer had the same authority in the domain of Torah Shebaal Peh, perhaps largely owing to the fact that it was written down and no longer transmitted orally. We lost the authority to be mechadish, to offer novel ideas, or to use the Yud Gimel Midot on our own to the same capacity. And writes the Rambam, everything after the seal of the Talmud, after the seal of the Gemara, is essentially an exploration, an elucidation, a commentary, or some attempt to understand and elaborate upon what has already been written in the Mishnah and the Gemara. But in terms of our authority to offer new ideas in the same way that the authors of the Mishnah and the Gemara did, that hasn't been done since the time of the Talmud, and we no longer have the authority to do so. So with that, we have concluded what makes up the Torah Shebaal Peh, and qualitatively what it makes up, and as time developed, what have been the major endeavors of the Baalei Masorah, who have been giving over and illuminating the Torah Shebaal Peh since Moshe Rabbeinu received it at Har Sinai. Okay.